You want to hear some stories?
Yeah, of course.
Cool. That's what I got. So, my name is Amitai Schleyer. I'm a software development coach, and I'm going to tell you some stories from my last job that accelerated my conversion from being on a team to wanting to coach teams. And the title of the talk is, Shoestring Agility in a Velcro Organization, and you can probably read symbolism into that. Whatever you find is probably accurate. Velcro implies excessive simplicity and incompatibility with shoelaces, and shoestring implies a low budget, but also kind of resourceful. So all that is in there. So that's the intro. I was at a bank, a big, dumb bank, not even one of the banks that funds Agile conferences or is trying to transform to Agile, just a big, dumb bank. Because I graduated from college as a 30-year-old with a music degree, and this is the job that I was offered. So took it. And I had been a programmer before, about 6 or 7 years before, and I was very lucky that in my very first programming job after I dropped out of college the first time, I hadn't even taken enough computer science or software engineering courses to have wrong ideas about how software gets made. I just had no idea about how software got made. And I was lucky, when I say that, that when I got hired into my first job as a developer, it was an extreme programming shop. They did everything with intent. They took a pile of really smart people, all of whom modeled on a daily basis that it is not sufficient to be a very smart person to write good software. You also have to pay attention to what you're doing. And I did not understand 80% of what was going on, but I picked that up, and about 10 years later, maybe I understood XP. But that was my first job. That was what was imprinted on me as a high-performing team and the kind of discipline it takes them to do it. And so when I graduated from college eventually, 9 years later, I hadn't programmed in a while, but I knew what it looked like when it was going well. So that's what I came with when I started this job. So first things first, the reason that I was hired, despite my credentials of being a music major, is that I knew a couple people who were in the IT security engineering department at this bank. I knew them from my involvement in NetBSD, which is an open source operating system. And they, over the course of a weekend, based on their world-leading knowledge of Kerberos, which is an authentication infrastructure, and the particularities of the distributed Unix plant at this company, over a weekend, they had just a proof of concept that they threw together in 2 days at one of their apartments. I don't know what they were drinking, probably something. A lot of copy-pasting, but a working proof of concept of how certain kinds of identities could be managed by the developers that needed to manage them. So for instance, if you're a big bank and you do a lot of custom software development, as this bank did, then you would want to, in development, create an ID that wasn't the same as the developer and wasn't owned by someone who isn't the developer, but was managed by people who were the developers, while being distinct from them, so that when you run the application in dev, it's a different ID on the machine, and it's a different ID over the network. And you want to do that in dev, and you want to do that in QA, you want to do that in UAT, you want to do that in prop. And so you can give permissions to those different IDs in parallel, but separately, so the staging is meaningful. And so this was a problem when these two guys, that were friends of mine, made it up this solution that had not been being solved very well at all. It was a 3-week manual process, depending on which business unit you were in, which platform you wanted an ID for, whether you could find the phone number for the right help desk based on that, and then whether they followed the manual processes that they may or may not have had documented accurately. So, recipe for disaster. Never mind later, if you wanted to change properties of this ID, how could they verify that you were one of the people who were allowed to ask for that? So it took a lot of management approval to get that. So these guys had this idea that they could write a system that would hook into Kerberos and provide a client that would manipulate these IDs according to rules that were enforced on the server that they also wrote. And they threw it together, and it worked really well for Unix, And they said, oh crap, this is going to be a software project for 5 years or so now, because everybody's going to want this. Who do we know that can make this a livable piece of code and take this off our plates? Because we just want to, we want to do other things with our lives. Who can we saddle with this? He's probably not going to get another job offer. And we know that he knows how to make good decisions. So we hire that guy. And that's where I came in. So the very first thing that I did was to break the system in production. I didn't study computer science. I don't know anything about IT security. But so what they were having me do is that now that we had this system that could manage the existence of these non-human application-specific identities, it might be possible at some point that an application exits its life cycle and those identities need to be turned off. For various reasons, they didn't want to delete them, they just wanted to have them disabled. And these guys, despite their copy-paste weekend hackathon, had made provision in the code and the database schema for that already. So I didn't have to figure out, like, well, how do I add a Boolean to SQLite schema so that it can be zero most of the time and one sometimes? And then how do I add a string field? It was all in there, just unused. And so all I had to do was copy-paste one of the existing server commands so that it handled, you know, it was called disable and marshaled and unmarshaled stuff from the network. And similarly on the client, copy-paste a different command that worked and wire it up. And I did. And that worked. So I got code review because there weren't really any tests. I had no idea. There were a bunch of weird verbs in this program, like assert, accuse. Scary. So I didn't know the domain language. I didn't know the domain without the language. I knew zilch. So I didn't really have a way to test it. Plus, these guys had always had root access on every machine in the company, and I did not, and did not need it, and did not want it. So there were certain aspects of the integration that I couldn't test. So the next best thing to pairing and automated testing is code review, I guess. And these were the guys that wrote it, and it hadn't been that long ago. So they looked over the code for the new server verb and command client that I added. And they also looked over, now that we have the possibility of an ID being disabled, I bet a lot of those other commands work differently, depending on whether they're working on something that's disabled or not. So I threw in a little more SQL, you know, excluding things or including things. And they read it all over, we put it in production, and my new command worked right, and some other stuff broke, of course. Saw this coming a mile away. So the first thing that I said was, whoops, and how urgent is it that we fix this? Very. And so once we saw what the problems were, it was really obvious where they were. It was just like SQL syntax mistakes that a music major would make. And so I said to Bill, because that was his name, Bill, if you need me to not screw up in production like that again, then I need to be doing test-driven development. Me personally, I need it. I don't know if the process needs it or the company needs it or you need it. I need it. And he said, do whatever you think you need so that you don't screw up in production like that again. So that was how I introduced myself to this big bank, is to screw up a system that's pretty important to authentication in production. So we did a bunch of refactoring and some things that were not refactoring but improved the quality of the code with the supervision of these two guys who had written it in the first place to get it to where it was testable, because we had some slack in the schedule that they had arranged for. And having done that, so the modus operandi at this bank, and it's probably common elsewhere, is that proposed changes to production have to go through a review process. And the review process involves different IT managers agreeing or disagreeing that it has been thought about carefully enough, asking whatever questions they want to ask, and being able to say yes or no at least a week in advance of the proposed move to production. But with the product that I was working on, which was kind of like at the center of a lot of things that people needed help with, we got a ton of requests, and sometimes they came in pretty late. So there was one Wednesday This was on a Friday, and Friday nights is when you can go to production at the bank, because it gives you the biggest window to fix what you screwed up before Hong Kong opens for business on Sunday. So Friday night's party time, right? So this was a Friday morning, and Bill called, and he said, so I got what doesn't really seem like a feature request. Seems like a feature demand, and I tried to say no, and they're not letting me. It's a really stupid feature, but we have to do it. And it just didn't even make sense. Like, it wasn't clear what its semantics would be, and it wasn't clear that it was definitely not clear that it would help solve the state problem. So here we are, stuck with it, but by now we can write tests. So I said, okay, we're going into production tonight. Do you want to know if you can have it in? Come back in an hour and a half, and I will have some test cases for what I think the weird behavior of this command, if it has to exist, would have to be. So I did. I went off and scratched my brain and dumped things out and thought of all the edge cases I could think of. And Bill, to his credit, as a programmer, could come and read that. These were, the system was written in Perl, has written in Perl. He read through it and he said, yeah, this command sucks. I wish we didn't have to do it, but we do. And if it does have to exist, I guess that is what it would have to do to work right. So 45 minutes later, the tests were passing and we shipped it that night. And I remember what he said, it will stay with me for the rest of my life. He said, I don't think I have the discipline to write tests first, but I'm really glad you do. Lesson learned. Yeah. So, next story in the series. We got into where we were. So, I mentioned that we got a request on Friday and we shipped it on that Friday, and that's kind of contrary to business as usual. In this company, they wanted a week in advance or more. But because we started to have pretty good test coverage, I was able to get the operations team to generally agree to take whatever we had done on Friday afternoon and put it in on Friday night. Generally. So, there was one time that a teammate of mine, when I was lucky enough to have one, had stayed up all night on Thursday. Not really necessarily, but just because he was really diligent and he wanted to make sure he got something in on that Friday. And he had pulled an all-nighter to get it done. Meanwhile, I'm preparing the release notes and the release procedure and everything that I usually do as the release manager. And there were a couple bits of documentation that the operations team was going to need in their wiki to describe how to maintain the feature that we were shipping out. And I figured Friday night's party night. I'm going to be on the phone for 3 or 4 hours, mostly waiting while they carry out the steps, and occasionally telling them, no, not that, this, or did you check that? And there's going to be plenty of time in there for me to edit a wiki and add a couple lines that are not complicated. But they looked at that, and they were reviewing whether we're going to have this release tonight. And they said, there's some important details missing from the process documentation. Rejected. And I got mad. Not so much for me, but for my teammate who had busted his butt that wasn't going to get to ship what he stayed up late for. For some reason, that made me more angry than whatever silly reason they were making up. So I got mad, and I got steamed, and I yelled at them, and I said, this is spurious, and you know, you're disregarding our effort, and if there was some reason you wanted to reject this, you could have just said what it is. It's not the thing you're saying. I know it's something else. At their expense and at my expense. And then, fortunately, it was the weekend, because that's what happens when you don't release on Friday night, is now it is the weekend. And I had plenty of time to think about what I had done that might make them react as they had. And the first thing that came to mind, and stayed there, is that they didn't trust us. And there was no reason why they should have trusted us. I was asking them to flout the review process, a very visible review process, a very visible step in the review process. Just don't do it. And whatever's done, whatever we on the development team say is done, just put it. And we knew why we were confident. We had great test coverage, and we knew it was green, and we knew that all the new features were covered, and all the old features were covered. And we would send them the test results, and they liked the numeric increase from release to release, but they didn't know what those tests meant. So we were confident and we knew why, but they weren't because they didn't. So this all became very clear as I was cooling down over the weekend. And I had an idea of what I would like to try if the operations manager were ever going to be willing to forgive me and try it. And that was, next time we got a feature, I'd love if he would pair a program with me on it. And so we got a chance to do the postmortem, and we talked about it, and to his fantastic credit, he was all game for it. He knew Perl, he knew the behavior of our system as somebody that was responsible for maintaining it, and for some reason he was okay with me having yelled at him like a jerk on Friday and said, yeah, sure, come. Thank God. So, certainly didn't deserve that, but I was very happy that he offered it. And later that week, we had a free opportunity to do that, because a feature came in, this time it was on a Wednesday, that again, somebody wanted for Friday. And again, normally this is the kind of thing that is not allowed because we have a week-long review process, at least. But this is the kind of agility we wanted to have. We wanted to be able to take those requests from the business and respond to them if they were small and simple. This one was. So, Thursday, we got in the conference room. The ops manager had his own checkout from our source control of all our code. Showed him how to run the test. They're all green. Said, okay, so let's break something in the code and prove that the test fails. And pick something obvious. Of course, it's red. Okay, put it back. Just to try to understand what's going on before we start. Then we kind of whiteboarded, what will this new feature that's been requested look like when it works right? And we both had a pretty good idea what those criteria were. And then we had the test writing thing that all of us in this room are familiar with, but he was not yet. Where I showed him where in the test file to start adding some assertions and how to express the ideas from the whiteboard in this Perl test file. And we run those, and they're red. So far, so good. Now we go into the code, and I direct him through the changes that would make those tests pass. He makes the changes, the tests pass. He said, that's kind of cool, I guess, but... And I said, before you commit that code, let's just run the whole of this, not just the tests around the thing that you change. And something else had broken. It wasn't a brutal test that had broken. It was a surprising side effect that we would have forgotten about. And the test caught it. And the light bulb went off in his head, and he said, aha! We can never have this problem in production. It's never even going to be in, you know, CI, because we caught it right now before we ever committed it. I get it. And from then on, as long as he was the ops manager, we never had any resistance to our release process. In fact, because he had learned how to trust us for reasons that he did understand, we were able to go from a quarterly or half-annually release process, because it was so painful, to once a month, which is about as close to continuous delivery as you can get in the bank. And it was once a month with whatever we had on the day of. And that enabled us to manage risk in a much smarter way than a week-long review process, because we're only shipping 1 month's worth of stuff. We can remember nearly all of what it was. As we develop, we know that it's going into production soon, so we're a little more careful as we do it. And if there's a need to roll back, it's not like people have been waiting for 8 months to get something, and then we have to roll it back and try again later. They've been waiting a month, so if we have to do a rollback, no big deal. As it turns out, there was only one time in about 3.5 years of monthly releases that we ever had to do a rollback. I'm not going to tell that story. It has to do with management mistakes that we prepared for by making sure our rollback plan was solid, and it was. So I have time for one more story, I think. And that is, so we have been going from nothing that you would recognize as XP or Agile, to test-driven, to at least a file with ideas of what to work on next, to shipping every month and letting that inform decisions about what to do next. And so that was like right on the cusp of maybe discovering that we could have followed a few more ceremonies and gained more from the process. And that's when, by some cosmic justice, a huge project that we did not want was assigned to us with a very fixed scope and a very fixed deadline that was maybe impossible. We really were not sure. So our first reaction was, you know, this functionality that you're after, this outcome that you're after, does not make obvious logical sense as an extension of the system that we're responsible for. So why are we the ones getting it? What they didn't say is, you're a pretty effective team that is reliable. What they did say is, the other options are worse. So we don't have the option to refuse, at least until we can prove that we can't do it. So that was our first step, is we did a big spike where we were going to have to scale up the amount of data in the storage, which was SQLite in the file, not designed for concurrency, by about 3 orders of magnitude. And the client concurrency would probably go up by 3 or 4 times. And it was not at all clear that that would work out okay for the SLA that we had. And if the solution to this problem is migrate to a different storage backend, we could say pretty clearly that that deadline is unhittable. So that was our first question. That was the biggest risk for this project, and that was the fastest way to find out if we had a leg to stand on and say no. And the research showed that mostly it was going to be fine, actually, and that if there were a few bottlenecks, we had a few actions that would probably help. So proceed. And this is where my coworker Nathan, who has taught me, the former thought worker, taught me everything I know about Agile and some. He said, here's what we're going to do. It hasn't been a problem yet that you don't have a backlog, but now we need, because we have fixed scope, we have a fixed deadline, we don't have any options about that. We can't afford to waste any work effort on doing something that isn't what's wanted. And we can't afford to have the upstream team that we depend on work on a schedule that isn't the same as ours, because we depend on them. So we need a project backlog, and that's the only thing we're going to work out of from now until end of the third quarter, which was 8 months away. So because we had expertise built up from having built up a test suite and starting to understand the domain language and the domain itself, and having a way to find out when we were wrong quickly from tests, we did a pretty good job making that backlog. We knew the right things to include. We knew what to watch out for. We knew it would be complicated about wedging this weird new, not exactly an identity, into our identity management system. And so we did a pretty good job writing the backlog, and we had a little bit of slack at the end where, for about 3 weeks worth of work, if that didn't fit, it was okay if we slipped it. Everybody agreed up front. And Nathan said, look, we don't know if we can do this on time, but now we do know how fast we'll have to go to do it on time, because we know how many points there are, and we know what the date is. So let's see what our velocity really is. Is it okay? Is it not okay? We'll find out. And it was fine. And then a couple months later, it was still fine. And then that upstream team started to get obstructive, and they wanted to change the API that we had provided a client-server pair for them. We had provided red tests for what we wanted their API to be for us. All they had to do was, you know, be responsible for integrating that into their actual system. And then meanwhile, we mocked that interface and test drove around it. And they came back a couple months later and said, can we change that API? And I said, no, for 2 reasons. One, our code, as written to that API, is done and working and tested. And we know that for a fact, because we're disciplined about our testing. And thing two is, look at this project burn-down chart. It had better be working right now. So the conversation quickly turned, because we had this data at our disposal, to remember those red tests we gave you? How can we help you get them green? How can we be involved in assisting you in that process? Because that's what we need. And we got there, and we knew the whole time, because of, you know, this very minimal set of Scrum practices, points, velocity, backlog, burn down. We knew where we were. We knew where we were in trouble. We were able to take action to change it. And we delivered to that deadline with 5 minutes to spare for an 8-month project. And we weren't surprised. We knew how it was going to go. So, and the things that were allowed to slipped as a result of this API argument, but we made it. And all of a sudden, observers inside this big dumb bank that had thought that our monthly ship whatever you have was an undisciplined kind of process, where they're used to make a manifest of all the expected features, deliver all of them, slip the date if need be, and then ship, as opposed to what we were doing. Now that they saw that we hit a deadline, they were much more interested, because suddenly it seemed like we were playing the same game, but better. And so, I think I'm going to have to stop there for my experience report. There are a lot more stories about why it was frustrating and difficult to live in an agile way in this company, but I will say that it accelerated my learning, because I was ready to be challenged in these ways, And one thing that I came out of that job with is that when you're under the kind of constraints that an inhumane environment can put you under, how do I say it? I have a lot of empathy for people who are in situations like that. I don't want to be in situations like that, but I do want to help people who are. And so I made a career change, and I'm a software development coach. So that's the thrust of the talk. If you want to hear more stories later, I can tell you. I think we have a few minutes. Any questions? Yeah.
How much flexibility did your team have to make their own decisions about their processes versus external control from management?
They had a lot. One of the reasons that we gelled as a team is that we had a common enemy. And they understood exactly. You've probably heard of the two different kinds of management. There's the kind that's an umbrella preventing things from falling on you, and there's the kind that, I don't know, lets it fall. I was a very effective umbrella for them. There was a very meeting-heavy culture that kind of turned into a black hole where, well, why didn't you get that done? Well, because we talked for 2 hours yesterday about why I didn't get that done. That's why. And so I just kind of blocked all of that from them, gave them a quiet working environment, and when they had ideas about how we should work, that's how we worked. Anyone else? Yeah.
So, based on those experiences, was that culture that you started able to spread to other parts of the company?
A tiny bit. It almost worked out that I was going to be an agile coach inside the company, which was actually a managing director's idea. He wanted me to keep my enthusiasm inside where a lot of bad software development projects needed help. And I did get to try that for 1 week. 1 week of coaching is not a lot, but there was a team at a different office that had started doing Scrum, and they didn't know if it hurt because they were doing it wrong, or because they had real problems, or what. And they apparently asked for some big name, I don't know who, but they got me, and it was okay. Like, I was able to help them understand what they were doing well, what might help them, and some things were immediately actionable. We came out of it feeling like we both wish we had more time. So there was a little bit, like, pockets. Where, and I used to give presentations every other week for half an hour on what TDD looks like, what Scrum looks like, what you get out of it. And people would come. I would get a couple dozen people from all over to these meetings. So I think there were pockets, but I don't think it metastasized, if that's the right word. Yeah. Okay, thank you.